Chapter 13, Sizzling Techniques to Explosively Boost Your Sales Through the Roof. Love your prospect first. Never sell anything for the main purpose of getting big bucks. The ultimate goal of selling is to build good relationships. Treat your prospects as friends. Be interested in their life story. Know their deepest fears, anxieties, and concerns. Never jeopardize your reputation. Always make sure that the customer will be satisfied and happy with your product or service. If you sell just anything to get some quick cash without any concern for your customer's well-being, you'll be on the losing end in the long run. Once trust is lost, it will be extremely difficult to regain it again. If you offer excellent products or services, they will tell other people. You'll get free recommendations. These referrals will be more likely to buy from you because they've been referred by people they know, your previous customers. You must be enthusiastic when selling anything which you believe will be beneficial to others. If you are not excited about your product or service, it will show from your voice and projection. Discover values. Know your prospects' values. Then relate to them how they will have their most cherished values attained by doing whatever it is that you're asking them. Ask your prospect how he arrived at buying something he really wants. Then structure your selling process in accordance with his buying process. For example, he might say that when he first saw what he wanted, he felt so excited he couldn't stop thinking about it every day until he bought it, and then he said it amazed his friends. If you're selling cell phones, for example, you can tell them something like, "When you check out what this cell phone can do, you'll feel so excited you might be unable to fall asleep thinking about how it can amaze your friends." People value different things. Some value money, some value freedom, while others value happiness in relationships. Whatever it is, know them and persuade people in accordance with their values. How do we know their values? Just ask, what's most important to you in going to this seminar, buying this computer, etc.? If they say they value the happy atmosphere, then work your message or proposal towards having a happy atmosphere. Other questions you may ask, what's the next most important to you in, or what factor made you decide to move here, buy this cell phone, etc.? What do you value in a relationship, a house? Ideally, if you want to know what someone values, pay attention to where he spends most of his time. If you want to know what someone is thinking often, just observe his actions. To know what someone's goals or dreams are, see what books or information materials he reads and listens to. Most people who dismiss the idea of continuous learning and improvement don't have ambition. You may even dig deeper into their values. Example, you. What's important to you in buying fitness equipment? Prospect. It has to make me sexy within the next 90 days. You. Well, what's important to you in becoming sexy within the next 90 days? Prospect. I'm going to join a beauty contest. You. What's important to you in joining that beauty contest? Prospect. Well, it will boost my self-esteem. Once you've dug deep, you'll be able to craft your sales message in such a way that your prospect's deepest values are met. In this case, you can say, this fitness equipment will boost your self-esteem to the roof because you'll be having a body so sexy, you'll be impressing the judges of any beauty contest you join. First impressions last, so make sure the impression you impart on people, especially the first time you meet them, is a positive one. If you have established trust and respect since the beginning, there are lesser chances that they will change their perception of you. It may take a very long time before you can gain the trust of another, but it only takes one single action to ruin it. And once you run the trust, you're almost assured that you will never get it back. Give, and you shall receive. Once you've identified their needs, go out of your way to satisfy them. Give them free personal advice or a free report or ebook. Make them feel special. Remember their birthday, their sons and daughters, job, anything about them. Give them greeting cards during special occasions. If you give them something of value or do anything that will make them remember you, then they will want to give something back. they will be more than happy to repay you. Once you've gained their trust, they will become a loyal customer for life. And if your product meets or exceeds their expectations, then you have a gold mine. Motivational triggers. Make the prospect feel that who he currently is or what he currently has is just not good enough. He can be better, or he can attain much more than his present condition. Show him how your product has helped many individuals just like him attain their desires, needs, and wants. Tell him about your unconditional guarantee so that he will feel safe and secure in getting your product. Magnify his perceived fear. Make him feel that his fear is absolutely capable of happening and that he's no exception from becoming a victim. Then provide the solution to end this fear. You may use stories and visualization techniques so that he can easily feel and experience the upcoming benefits. If you can craft your message in a way that it appeals with any of the triggers following, you are more likely to get better results. Number 1, desire for pleasure. Number 2, fear of pain. Number 3, having or saving more money. Number 4, prevention of the loss of money. Number 5, attainment of excellent health and long life. Number 6, enhancement of relationships. Number 7, the need for love, respect, security, recognition, and trust. Probably the biggest motivators are pleasure and pain. If you can persuade them in such a way that you make them feel the pleasure of doing what you want or experience the pain of not doing what you want, using imagination and skillful word selections and descriptions, you will become an excellent persuader. However, it has been proven that the avoidance of pain is much more of a motivator than the attainment of pleasure. For me, it's better not to develop cancer than to earn $5,000. So you better paint a clear picture in your prospect's mind of the negativities, the consequences, the bad effects of not having your product or service. For instance, you're selling life insurance. You could say, imagine if something unexpected happens to you. Your family has no one else to turn to. They'd be forced to go out on the streets, beg for mercy, and take any job that they could get, no matter how hard it is. It'd be a nightmare, to say the least. Then after they realized it, identify all the most beneficial and attractive positive aspects that your life insurance has to offer. For only a certain amount of money a month, you could have absolute assurance of financial security no matter what happens. Your family would have all the support they need, and you can always sleep well at night, knowing that they will never have to struggle with life's hardships. As much as possible, show a more emotionally powerful benefit. If you're selling a liquid cleaner, don't just say it cleans effectively. Say something like, it saves your children from having to experience the harmful effects of disease-causing germs. Benefits versus features. People respond better to emotions than logic. In fact, research suggests that we rely on our emotions most of the time when making decisions. Therefore, you should aim to expound more on your products, services, and benefits, which appeal to the emotions, more than the features, which just appeal to logic. Here are examples of features and their corresponding benefits. The feature, this car has a VVTi engine. Benefit, this car is very fuel efficient, so you'll save much more money in the long run by investing in this new car than continuing to use your old one. Feature, this drink contains catechins. Benefit, this drink prevents the growth of cancer cells. However, we cannot eliminate the importance of logic. After people bought something, they justify their decision to convince themselves that they did the right thing. Be accurate. Be accurate when you're selling a product. It's hard to believe that $100 is your discounted price. Make it sound more exact, like $97, or how about $99.97. Numbers ending in 7 tend to be more saleable based on research. Don't say you're 40% done with your assignment. 37% or 37.5% is more accurate. Accuracy or exactness is not only important in sales, but is important in many aspects of your life. For example, you are a programmer applying for a job position. In your resume's job description, instead of simply saying, created analysis software program, you might want to say something which has more quantifiable figures, such as created analysis software program that has boosted company earnings by an average of $7,583.95 monthly. On the other hand, there are many people, particularly salespeople, who are using inexact wordings with great results. That's because their vague statements give their prospects the freedom to make their own conclusions. Notice the words in this example. More than half of all applicants were hired. 51% is more than half, but our minds may tend to overestimate since there's no exact figures. Around 90% of Mark's students have passed the board exams. That store has a grand sale of up to 80% off. Up to 80% off, but many other products in that store have less or no discount. Accuracy in date and time is as important as the numbers. Don't say that you'll meet someone after a few minutes. Is it 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or maybe even 30 minutes? He may expect you to be there in 5 to 10 minutes, but your thought of a few minutes might turn out to be 30 minutes, resulting in miscommunication, frustrations, and negative emotions. Don't say that the deadline is at the end of the month. Be specific. Is it 5 a.m. in the morning or 9 p.m. at night? There is a big difference. By being accurate with your time, you'll get more out of other people. Don't even say around a specific time. An example, around 5 p.m. See, I once attended a party that is scheduled to start at around 5 p.m. Most of the guests arrived between 5 to 6 p.m., but the party started at 8 p.m. Some of the guests were so irritated that they left the party even before it started. Proofless exaggerations. Some master persuaders and salespeople have used this technique with great results. They say things that may seem to be true, or that may be assumed as universally accepted fact, but there is no proof nonetheless. Here's an example. This is the most delicious burger in town. But by whose standards? What are the criteria for judging the best burger? Well, no one has the final answer. Example 2. Everybody loves Mr. Brandon. How did you know? There may be people admiring him, but you'll never know who might be jealous or angry with him. Let your prospect own the product in his mind. As you probably already know, people would rather not get a thing that they haven't owned yet than lose something already in their possession. Once they possess something, they treat it with value. How do you get your prospects to sense ownership of your product so that they may feel its value and purchase it? Devise a state in the mind of the prospects where the product is already theirs, and they are totally enjoying and benefiting from it. For example, you could say, once you've owned the Abs Mega Machine, you'll be the envy of your friends. You're going to get six-pack abs and flatten your tummy in just 6 weeks. The days of suffering back pains are over. And who knows? You might be the next model for Flex Magazine. Strike while the iron's hot. If your prospect shows interest or wants to buy your product, do everything you can to satisfy them immediately. Don't wait for your presentation to be over, or for the rooster to crow in the morning, or after watching your favorite TV show. Always be ready. Never deny their needs. They may change their decision in the blink of an eye, so grab the opportunity when they show any intent. When they have agreed on the sale, stop talking, or you might just cause them to think it over. Less talk, less mistakes. As my mom always says, I think she got the right idea. You'll establish a good reputation, and you'll also lessen the chances of your prospect dealing with your competitors. Be a hero. Tell them all the pains and agonies you've gone through just to save them from doing or attaining something they hate. For example, say, I've tested all the methods and spent lots of money. Just know what works and what doesn't. I've sacrificed time and relationships just to get this information that would be extremely beneficial to those who would apply it. Make them realize that you did everything for them and endured all the hardships just to give them something of great value. And they get to enjoy the fruits of your labor. They get to reap where you painstakingly sowed. The counter-proposal method. Make an initial sales offer. Then craft another counter-proposal, this time a larger one. Give the larger proposal to your prospects. If they reject it, then offer them your initial sales offer. See what happens? Your prospects will be more receptive to accept the smaller offer. By declining the larger proposal, they will feel embarrassed to turn down another one, especially if it's not as enormous as the first. Tony's mom wants to eat Luigi's lasagna for dinner. She knows he doesn't want to go out and buy dinner, but she also knows that he absolutely hates cooking. So she'll ask, Tony, could you cook me some lasagna for dinner? He'll say, but Mom, I don't know how to cook. She would say, could you then just buy me some lasagna from Luigi's? It's hard to turn down a second request. Have you ever experienced someone calling you to sell or offer something? Then when you did not buy, they asked for referrals? What did you do? You probably gave the contact details of your friend, didn't you? When you rejected his offer the first time, the second request, asking for referrals, is difficult to reject, even if you never intended to share your friend's personal details. People feel guilty if they refuse your request, so they want to make it up to you. And if your second offer is something they can afford to do, then they'll grab the opportunity to make it up to you. The key is to make the first offer as big, yet as realistic as possible, without having the impression that you have a self-serving motive or hidden agenda. Don't make the initial offer so unreasonable that it becomes outrageous. It would only produce negative effects. Now, concerning the secondary proposal, how much smaller should it be? The answer, as long as the secondary request is smaller than the first one, no matter how reasonably large the first one is, your persuasion effort is right on track. Here's how you can apply this in your marketing. Present the more expensive yet better quality product first. If they buy it, good for you. If they decide not to get it, then offer them the less expensive yet lower quality one. The beauty of this is that they will tend to compare both. They may either find that the more affordable product is a better deal for the lower price, or they may find that the quality of the first product is far superior than the lower price product. You can even do this strategy to the third or fourth level, meaning if you can't get them to agree on your first and second attempts, you may try and try again with subsequent smaller requests. Union leaders apply this strategy when negotiating with management. Using this strategy also increases the chances that the person who accepted the secondary request will actually do or comply with the request. A test was conducted in which a first group was presented with the actual request up front, while a second group was presented with a larger request initially before being asked for the actual yet smaller request. Both groups who agreed with the request were asked to come back after a week to fulfill what they had been assigned to do. The results revealed that the second group who compiled initially had almost double the rate of people actually coming back and doing the request, as opposed to the first group who also agreed to return. More surprising is the fact that the second group is more willing to comply with future requests. Why is this so? Well, that's because by having an optional secondary request, the second group's freedom of choice was not limited. It's like they were given an escape route, and by accepting it, they felt like they were given a favor, because they were allowed to reject the first offer. In this case, they felt a sense of contentment, and at the same time, responsibility to fulfill the secondary and other future requests. Fuse your message with their qualities. I am about to reveal a very effective persuasion method. In selling, you can get more people to buy more of your products if you are focusing on a very targeted group of prospects. Would you sell lipstick to a man? Not a good idea. The same principle applies in all aspects of your persuasion efforts, whether you're using persuasion in your career, relationships, you name it. You have to make your message fit in with their personality, behavior, values, mindset, and beliefs in order to persuade them successfully. How will you be able to do that? Use the power of questions. Just ask them specific details that will reveal more of their inner state. Number one, to know their decision-making criteria, you ask, how do you make a decision in choosing which plan to push through? If they answer A, I just know it deep inside. This means they rely on themselves, so you can customize your message by saying something like, you probably already know deep inside that this product is the perfect choice. Or B, I ask opinion of Mr. X, Miss Y, or I do research on reliable books. This means they rely on others, so you can craft your proposal by saying something like, this strategy is proven to be the most cost-effective based on evidence gathered by Mr. X's group. Number two, to know if they have the need or the opportunity mindset. You ask, why did you apply to work as manager in this corporation? If they answer A, I need the money to pay the monthly bills. This means they are motivated by their needs and less likely by what they truly want in their lives. They are likely to stay in their comfort zone, so words like having a safe, secure job are heaven to their ears. You can't motivate them by describing how terrific their future will be because they're tied to satisfying their current needs. B, I love the opportunity to meet new people and take on exciting projects. This means they're motivated by their expectations of something great or exciting to occur in the future. You cannot motivate them by suggesting they need your product or service. Number three, to know if they focus on getting pleasure or avoiding pain. You ask, why do you want to become a millionaire? If they answer A, I want to travel around the world and buy anything I want. This means they are going after pleasure. So you can customize your message by saying something like, "Our course provides you with the opportunity to go to exciting destinations, meet successful people, eat at the finest restaurants, and shop to your heart's delight." Or B, "I don't want to suffer from poverty and constant worrying of where I will get the money to pay for the bills." This means they want to avoid pain. So you can craft your message by saying something like, "With this new job, you'll never have to experience the agony of stressful labor." Number four, to know if they are detail-oriented or the in-a-nutshell type, you ask, "Shall we proceed or would you like more details?" If they answer A, let's get right to it. This means they want the big picture, and they don't want to burden themselves with knowing every specific detail of your product or service. They think and act quickly, so you can persuade easily by simply emphasizing the main benefits and getting straight to the point. Or B, "I'd like to study your proposal first before making my decision." This means they want to know all the facts, evidences, instructions, or details before jumping into any conclusion. They are prone to analyze and be meticulous with details, so you can persuade them by giving them full documentations. When persuading anyone, remember that you should always state your message in terms of their needs, wants, desires, goals, and dreams. Remember that they are always asking, "What's in it for me?" Focus on the savings. Are your products a little expensive? If people see a price tag of $150, they will be discouraged and will move on to the next offer that allows them to save. But what if you tell them that the total value of products is worth $2,500? They would be able to save $2,350, a great big savings of 94%. Wouldn't that make them think? Even if your products are not that affordable, if they perceive your products as having extraordinary value, it will trigger the savings factor and they will grab the opportunity of getting them at a very big discount. Couple that with some specific figures, like 94% savings, and a time-sensitive offer, this price will increase on August the 25th. Then you've got a proven winner. They will overlook the initial price because they got so excited about the tremendous amount of savings that they'll get if they buy your products. Paint a vivid mind picture. If you want to persuade someone, you must paint a vivid picture in his mind of the pleasure he will receive when he does what you've asked, or the pain he will suffer if he does not do what you've asked. Ask him to imagine that perfect or worst picture in his mind. Here's an example. Just imagine how people would admire and respect you when they find out you hold an important position in this organization. Fill out the form now to gain the power you deserve. Or, just imagine how horrible your oily face will look with acne, pimples, and pustules sprouting all over your face if you do not use our facial wash. Divulge your minor weakness or bad points to gain trust. You can gain trust easily by establishing a reputation of honesty and integrity. Tell them the flaws of your product before informing them of the overwhelming benefits to make the flaw look insignificant. This applies three principles of persuasion. Number one, reciprocity. They would want to return the favor of honesty you've given to them. By being honest, you've just shown them you can be trusted. They will repay that trust by buying your product. Number two, commitment. Once they knew you can be trusted and purchased your item, they will tend to continue trusting and buying from you as long as you meet their expectations. Number three, authority. Once you've shown the defects of a product, you establish yourself as an expert who is willing to reveal the bad points, even if it means abandoning your self-interest for their sake. Sometimes, when we list down only all the good qualities of a product, people may tend to be skeptical or doubtful of what we're saying. To counter this, mention a flaw or bad side of your product before offsetting it with the many good sides. The reasons for this is because when you confess the negative part, your prospect's defenses will drop down, and he will be able to focus on the positive aspects and be more open to accept your message. Businesses have been using this technique to counter any marketing attack by competitors or objections by prospects. They'll say something like, "We have to admit that our new product is quite expensive because it has the highest quality, all-natural ingredients, and has taken 2 years to perfect. Despite its price, it has become the fastest-selling product in this store." Highly profitable pricing strategies. Incidentally, asking an expensive price may be an advantageous move. The reason is that people correlate expensiveness with high quality. A very good friend of mine who is meticulous when it comes to the quality of products she's buying would almost always select the most expensive one, even if she has not carefully evaluated them all. We live in a world of information overload, Since we want to avoid confusion and mental agony, we often make our decisions and base our judgment on simple cues, such as the price of the product. Another example would be discount coupons. People associate discount coupons as a way for them to save money, even if they provide no significant savings at all. People don't want to analyze the intricacies of things. Their time is much too important. A discount coupon would give them a sense of relief because it is automatically perceived as a way for them to save money, time, and energy. Some salespeople would even combine the power of expensive pricing and discounting. For example, the actual price of an item is $100. They would go to such great lengths by saying that the original price is $200, but the first 20 people get a half-price discount of only $100. They give the prospects the perception that the product has a higher value. They give a significant 50% discount, and they employ the principle of scarcity. Some marketers also utilize the make-them-feel-guilty strategy, where they make the customers feel that the buyers have taken much more than they should have, such as the original price is $77, but for this week only, you get it at half price, only $27. Some salespeople apply a tricky strategy. I've personally experienced it myself. When you ask a salesperson how much a product costs, he shouts to his superior from a distance, "How much is it?" And the superior shouts back, $67. The salesperson would pretend to hear the price by mistake and say, "He said $37. He might also say something like, "Please keep this a secret between us. I'll let you have it for only $37 because I like you a lot." Many options, less sales. Martha's opened up a pastry shop. She makes tarts that are so good, just smelling them will make your mouth water. For the first few days, her business is steady. She tried experimenting with other varieties and tart fillings. She perfected her craft. And soon, she's ready to add 7 more assorted selection of tarts to her 8 original ones. She begins selling all 15 types of tarts. After a month, she noticed a drop in her sales by 20%. She thought this might just be a seasonal occurrence. The next month, her sales declined further by another 5%. Her tarts are still the same old great-tasting pastries people have previously been raving about. She thought and thought. What was she doing before that she's not doing at the present? What does she have before that she doesn't have now? Then she experienced a light bulb experience. She will try to just sell 8 different varieties, 4 original ones, and 4 from her new recipe. After a month's time, her sales rose by a staggering 35%. The next month, she tried a different assortment of tarts to sell, but never increased by more than 8 varieties. Her sales remained consistently high. She has discovered the secret strategy. It may sound ironic, but customers will be confused if you sell them products that have too many combinations, varieties, or options. But customers will also find it quite boring to be patronizing the same products all of the time. So you also have to put some diversity in them. Change the flavors or colors or selections from time to time, and they will be curious to try them out. In a nutshell, don't provide too many options, but change the varieties after some time so that they will not get bored. Help them conquer the fear of change. People are afraid to make changes in their lives. They would rather stay with their unsatisfying state of living rather than risk having to lose anything. They foresee the negative consequences of their actions, but not the positive. It is now your duty to let them feel the agony of staying at their current status. Make them visualize the undesirable outcome for not making any change in their life. If they can picture the pain that comes along with being stagnant, they will be motivated to take the necessary action to avoid any suffering. Make them realize the negative end result of staying where they are. Then knock them down with the most attractive benefits of your product that will solve and end their dilemma. Repeat, repeat, and repeat. Once is enough for the wise man, they say. But in the world of sales and trade, there's no such thing as an arrangement being confirmed just once. In order for you to finally close that deal, you will have to exercise a number of persuasion strategies, and one of the most effective is repetition. The more you repeat the benefits of the product or service you are selling, the more it becomes natural to you and your prospect. It is this feeling of naturalness that you want to accomplish, because when an idea becomes second nature, it won't appear as if you're trying to sell, but instead, you'll just be highlighting the obvious. After watching a certain advertisement on television, notice how we find ourselves humming the ad's catchy jingle, even while we're doing something else. That's repetition in action. In fact, it operates on several levels. Repetition is necessary to retain a certain piece of information to memory. For example, if you need to learn a certain poem, you keep repeating it to yourself, even in your sleep, so you can commit it to memory. This method is also needed to promote a better understanding of a certain idea or issue. Thus, if you want to convince your prospect that your product is the best in its industry, then you will have to keep repeating its benefits and the awards, if ever, it received to persuade him. Repetition also breeds familiarity. The more often you reiterate the merits of your product, the more likely your target buyer will feel and think that what you're saying is the one and only truth. There might be other brands in the industry, but if your prospect is most familiar with yours because of your advertising strategies, then he is likely to buy what you are offering. Repeated exposures will subconsciously embed your message or image into other people's minds. If you constantly familiarize them with the good points or advantages, then you're going to the right direction in making them develop likability for you or your product. On the contrary, being constantly exposed to something that connotes negative aspects such as hatred, rivalry, or envy will only intensify those negativities. If you dislike someone, seeing him often would only aggravate your bitter feelings toward him, right? Repetition should not be overdone, as familiarity can also breed contempt, as the saying goes. If you bombard the buyer too much, you will appear desperate. Your campaign will look forced, and your approach will seem irritating. You want to win your client over to your side, not drive him away by being too pushy. Be sensitive enough to know when to limit repetition. One alternative method is to reword or present your message in different ways, so as not to bombard them with the exact same statement over and over again. There is a method to successful repetition, and that is moderation. Perseverance is essential, but as with anything else in this world, too much is too much. If you start annoying your client with your aggressiveness, you're not likely to get any positive response from him or his network, who he will most probably tell now or any time in the future. Leave them hanging and hungry for more. According to Wikipedia.org, the Zeigarnik effect states that people remember uncompleted or uninterrupted tasks better than completed ones. That is to say, that people remember interrupted tasks better than they remember completed ones. How do we apply this in persuasion and sales? Keep them hanging in suspense that they will not stop until they know the ending. TV and radio programs use this often to make the viewer stay tuned to the next episode. Writers are also doing this to make people continue reading until the very end. If you're selling an information product, you can use this effectively by giving them a sample excerpt that ends in such a way that they will want more details from you so badly that they have to buy your next product and buy your product to satisfy their urge or curiosity. Make them say, "Wow! So you have successfully sold them your product. That's great!" However, this is not the end of your sales process. Make sure that they are more than satisfied with their purchase. Surprise them with unexpected bonuses. Follow up with them to see if everything's working smoothly. Get feedback to know how you can be of greater service to them or to their referrals in the future. If they ever have any complaints, attend to them immediately. Just imagine how one unhappy customer may ruin your business by telling everyone the horrific experience he had encountered with your product. Most important of all, establish relationships. Do not target a one-time sale. You'll have better chances of making some sales again with satisfied people who have bought from you in the past. They will also recommend you to other people and you'll get more exposure. How to get sales fast and minimize refunds. Aim to have your product buy the product or conclude the transaction as soon as you can. This will only strengthen his belief that he's making the right decision, and he will find the reasons to prove it. When a customer purchases your product, he's already confirmed to himself that he's making the right move. After buying it, he will continue to believe or find ways to convince himself that he's made the right choice, even if people around him makes him realize that he may have made the wrong decision. However, there are times when people around him might be influential enough to make your customer doubt his own judgment, resulting in what we may call buyer's remorse. One thing you can do to minimize refunds is to communicate with the buyer immediately after he purchased. Say something like, "Thank you for investing in this. You've made a great decision." Note the word investing. It's much more powerful than buying or purchasing because it connotes that something of equal or greater value will come back in either tangible or intangible form, as opposed to buying, which has the impression of spending money. Then by saying that he has made a great decision, you are confirming his belief of making the right move. Think of a time when you know you did the right thing. Having someone else tell you that you made a wise decision makes you more confident in what you've done, doesn't it? The same principle applies in sales. Common challenges that salespeople encounter. Number one, the prospect cannot afford the product or service, so it helps to be flexible and have a payment program. Number two, the prospect does not need your product or service. You've heard many claim that they can sell ice to Eskimos. They probably have a gun pointed at the Eskimos' heads. The truth is, you cannot sell something they don't need. Otherwise, you're just manipulating them. However, if you believe they need your product or service for their own benefit, but they said they don't need it, the challenge may just lie in the fact that you did not clearly explain its benefits to them. Make them realize and feel how the value of your product or service greatly exceeds its selling price. Number three, the prospect wants to be sure he's making the right decision in getting your product. If that's the case, let him take the product home with him if possible. Then tell him he can return it after a certain number of days, and you'll return the full payment if he's not satisfied. Once he gets his hands on it, he'll be more likely to keep it. If he asks something like, "Will it be able to do this?" you can answer, "If it can, will you invest in it?" This is the end of chapter 13.